Good afternoon, and welcome to Observations of Our Times, For Our Times. Craig won't be here today. He is scheduled to be on the Shabbat program tonight. I'm Kirk, and I'm here with Scott and a special guest. Scott will be joining us a little later, hopefully, as he's working a couple of programs at the same time. He's a man of many talents. But I would like to introduce you to a friend, and her name is Molly, who she's joining us today to talk about Yom Kippur. How are you, Molly?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good so far. By way of introduction, Molly has two children, and she was concerned to make sure that she could share Yahweh's plan with them. And many of y'all may know that she has been putting together slideshows on each of the festivals. And Molly, I looked at your Yom Kippur the other day before we started chatting, and I thought it was quite good. In fact, I declared it Tob.
Oh, thank you. That's huge praise coming from you with your artistic talents.
I thought what would be so interested on Yom Kippur for us to share today was that there's a lot of parents and a lot of grandparents, and I thought they would be thrilled to, if they don't know about your SLAD programs and all, they might be thrilled to know about them and know how they work and so forth, and eventually they'll be able to see them. How did you begin? You want to tell us a little bit about how you began it and how the children have received it so far?
Oh, sure. I came into the covenant probably about 4 years ago. I was raised actually an LDS Mormon, and my parents converted to the church when I was about six. And I actually had quite a lot of difficulties, you know, making sense of the dogma of the religion. And I even actually went out to BYU for the first three semesters. And then it was kind of a mutual agreement that, you know, maybe you should go somewhere else to finish your education. So I since left the church and then spent about 10 years, married someone not in the church. And we started looking, you know, bouncing back and forth with other religions. And I just never really could find a place that I felt made sense, you know, with the dogma and the tenets of their religion. Paul not really meshing up with Jesus and, you know, the Old Testament not really making sense with the New. And like I said, about 10 years and then 4 years ago, I stumbled across, you know, Yada Yah and was blown away by what I had read and started wading through the pages and pages of information there. And I thought, how can I convey this really amazing things to my children, which at the time, I think they were like 8 and 10. Mm-hmm. And being a teacher, I thought, well, PowerPoint has always worked for my students, and the best way for me to learn something is to have to explain it to someone else. So I came up with, you know, 8 or 10 slides, starting off with Passover, just trying to just glean, you know, the main points, but also put it down towards an audience of children instead of, you know, kind of the audience that Yada Yah was written for.
Right.
So that's what I did. I just started just paging through. Now there's like 100 pages just written on Pesach alone and just trying to get out the key points that I thought would be pertinent for them to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole story.
Uh-huh. How did they receive it? What was their feedback on the kids?
Well, at first, you know, when we started walking away from religion anyway, you know, we stopped going to church. We stopped Sunday worship. We stopped, you know, looking at Christmas and Easter. And you know, I started filling that with instruction of what Yahweh wants for us in terms of the seven Mikre. And this kind of helped them understand the transition. So they really liked the PowerPoint. And then I also came up with like a Jeopardy for them to, and we do scavenger hunts in the house. So I think it's important for parents to really make this light and, you know, because this is really heavy stuff. And for, you know, for kids, it can be overwhelming. For adults, it can be overwhelming.
Sure.
So I think it's important to keep it hopeful and light and fun and, you know, game-like for them as they first start learning this.
Well, I was kind of curious how you approach concepts like the Ruach Kodesh, a set-apart spirit and stuff. That's pretty difficult to explain starting out, too. So, and the same thing like, you know, a diminished manifestation of Yahweh being Yosha. That's, that's
well,
a lot for a little kid to wrap around other than just, but I suppose if you just approached it father, mother, son, family relationships that way, that would probably cover most of it initially. And
right.
As they grow, you know, they can get a little heavier and heavier.
And then in yada yada, I think the metaphor was used, like if you're in a boat and, you know, you have one little piece of the ocean in a bucket.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that's a really great metaphor to show, you know, this is the diminished manifestation, and I threw it up. It would be, if it was vaporized, it would be like the set apart spirit. And like they understand that concrete.
Mm-hmm.
But with Yom Kippurim, you know, we're getting into the heavier concepts. We just celebrated Teruah. And, you know, it's really up to parents to discern what it is they want to share with their kids, how much their kids can handle. Because, you know, with Teruah, we were talking about how the set-apart spirit is going to be taken from the earth and how the harvest of souls is going to happen. And my 12-year-old looked at me and said, does that mean, you know, my best friend isn't coming along with us?
Mm.
And, you know, it's I've always tried to raise them to be hopeful and, you know, glasses half full. And I said, well, I'm just an average, you know, homemaker, you know, wife and mother. I said, I stumbled across this, and I saw the truth there, and we took it and ran as a family. I said, your friends could do the same thing. And Teruah is all about, you know, boldly proclaiming and, you know, being a messenger. So I said, if you see just a grain of interest, please, you know, encourage your friends, you know, and their families to start searching. It's there. I mean, thank heavens for the Internet.
Yeah.
Because I would still be in the dark if it wasn't for.
Yeah, most of us. Had I not heard him on the radio, well, Terry heard him
sure.
on the radio first and then shared it with me, and that's the, all of a sudden everything started to click.
Right.
Now, you also, like I, have a kind of a love affair for the pictographs and everything. Are those really helpful for the kids? Do they see when you see
Oh,
the
they
word?
Love it. Yeah. Yeah, and it's the hieroglyphics of trying to, like, looking at it and trying to think, okay, well, this and this means something, then the whole picture means something, because in our language we don't have that, you know,
yeah.
with our words. So that's fascinating to the kids. They really like trying to discern when they know what the letters mean and trying to mm-hmm. push them together and trying to figure out the overall word. And I really like how you started us on that, because I thought that was really,
oh, yeah.
yeah.
Well, I was kind of blown away by them, because
yeah.
I never thought too much about terms of in our frame, in our language frame, we are always talking about the letters are just sounds. You know, we learn
right.
that way, phonetics. And
right.
then it's all of a sudden, well, hang on, this really means something. And what does it mean? And it not only just means a little something, it can mean a whole lot of things,
right.
both positive and negative. I mean, nourishing words, or they can be evil words. They can be, you know, and all the teeth, it's nourishment, it's food, and then all the metaphors that go with it. And you go, wow, this
right.
This is cool. And you string them together.
Well, it also takes
that's
like,
what happens, yeah. You want to share a little bit about your actual presentation on why you chose what you chose, or anything you want to tell us about Yom Kippurim presentation? So.
Well, when I did string together Kippurim, and we started off with the kaf, and if you know want to talk, you know much better about the letters than I do,
well,
but you know, the open palm and allowing. So if you want to.
Well, I'm gonna cover that in a minute anyway. I was interested
okay.
in your little on your slideshow. You have 10 of them on the slideshow. And
yeah.
Just anything you want to just tell them about those and the ones that were most interesting to you or difficulty factor to
sure. The first three slides, if you were looking at the slideshow, is kind of like it's an introduction of, you know, what the seven steps are, and it talks about what, you know, I went through each one and just put like a little picture next to it and a little summary of, you know, starting from Pesach and ending up at Sukkah. And then the next string of slides is about what Kippurim actually means. When you look at the pictograph and you string it together and what the overall arching objective is. And it talks about a kafar, you know, a covering over of protecting the life within. And then I put like a little rainbow and said, okay, what other time did Yah talk about covering over and protecting the life within? And, you know, like a little hint of that, hey, this harkens back to Noah and how the ark was covered with pitch so to protect the life within, just like how we're going to be protected by the set apart spirit and protect our lives, our souls.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that was a big concept for them. And then we talked about how anybody, you know, Yahweh offers anyone that's looking at the five parts of the covenant, like those, anybody can do that. And there's a slide that talks about each of the five, you know, walk away for Babylon, trust and fully rely on Yahweh, observe and his mikre, study his words, and then teach your children, raise them up before Yah, and circumcise your sons, and how anyone that meets these five conditions can all be part of the family. And then we talked about how Yom Kippurim is celebrating, you know, people coming back who have rejected this that are coming back, and that, and we're talking about Yah's children, Yisrael and Yehudim, and how Yahweh is going to fix that relationship with them, because right now the Yehudim have rejected these five stipulations of the covenant. They've embraced religion, and politics. They only trust their rabbis.
That's
they,
right.
You know, they ignore all the set apart days, or they make them different. They are studying the oral law of the rabbis and the Talmud instead of studying the Torah. They are circumcising their sons, but they're teaching their children not the way of the Torah, but only the way of the oral law. And then next couple of slides talk about how the future fulfillment of Kippurim, about how the garment of light is going to protect us in these future events as we watch them unfold. And this is the part where, this, you know, kind of a little intimidating for kids to think about that, you know, Teruah is going to come, the harvest of souls is going to happen. And then I do talk about the 7, you know, years of tribulation and the wars and chaos that's going to be inflicted, and how Yom Kippurim is going to happen. And at the end of the last battle, Armageddon, Yahweh will return to reconcile his covenant relationship with Israel and Yehudim and protect the remaining Yehudim from their enemies. And then Sukkah. And then the last great day. And then the last two slides talk about how we can remember and observe Yom Kippurim in 2017. And, you know, we remember Yahweh's promises. We set apart the day to be with our spiritual mother. And we celebrate as a family that we are going to be prepared for this, and that we will witness this amazing reconciliation of Yahweh, Yisrael, and Yehudim, and we will all be presented before Yahweh as firstborn children and heirs with a garment of light. And then I think I have, like, coming attraction, Sukkah, next.
And that is the big attraction.
Well, for my kids it is, because it's kind of like, we got through the really dark parts, now we can celebrate.
Because
we love camping.
That's cool. Well, I have nothing left to offer then. You've done it all,
oh.
Kid. It's very impressive. I thought it was wonderful. I encourage people, if they can get a hold of that, to use it for the children. I thought it was just exceptional. So.
Well, thank you.
Before I roped you into this, I had prepared a lot of material, and I'm just going to jump into that a little bit. You have it in a nutshell. I'm going to elaborate a little bit, and then there are some places in there where we can talk a little bit about why I like the language so much, and some examples, and then I will also go into the part about that I sent you about Yom Kippurim. I'm not really much of a translator, like obviously not like Craig, and certainly not even anywhere close to JB. But what I do that I was very helpful for me was I'm able to go through the Torah, pick out each one of the words, try to find the context, and just look them all up in multiple lexicons.
Mm-hmm.
And I just write down everything it says, and then try to figure out what applies to there, so that I understand exactly what Craig has translated, so that I can verify it. Not that I distrust him; he's very, very good at this. I don't think I've even stumped him, but I've had some other insights on some things that were kind of cool. And to me, it was satisfying to. Know that you can go through these things in the lexicons, and you can go through the interlinearies and break all this down and find out that that's exactly what it says. And the tragedy I found was that we've been so misguided and misled by these English translations. It's just...
And verifying, like when I first started reading, I was such a skeptic. And so I did exactly, you know, I looked it all up, and I was like, oh, he can't mean that. And then, oh, my gosh, it's all there. It's all there. We just had been blind all this time.
Well, see, I was really stupid. I actually knew a lot of this stuff to be true, and was allowed to have someone convince me that Paul said.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Paul said.
Yeah, Paul said. Yeah, we didn't say that, but Paul said that. So,
sure.
If you want to listen to, and then when you're confronted with it, a big dose of it, like in yada yada, you go, oh wow. You know, I knew that was right. That means, but the worst thing was I knew I had heard his name. Of course, it was pronounced Yahweh, but mm-hmm. I had heard his name, and I said, "Wow!" And then, and it didn't seem to matter. And all of a sudden, it became my hot button. And then it went from there, and it's been just about a 10-year study ever since. So if you would allow me, and feel free to jump in on some of this stuff. I've prepared a little bit of material for Yom Kippurim and going along that line. And basically, the way I view it is the crux of the whole matter is Yahweh wanted a family. Mm-hmm. And everything, which was a different concept, it kind of blew me away a little bit, everything in our three-dimensional world was created by Yahweh for this purpose. There's really no reason to have it here or have mankind just so he can say, I made another rock fly through space, or I made a human being or a dinosaur. His whole objective was to build a situation where he could develop a family of his own. And the hardest part about it for him and for anyone is every parent or every spouse would know that if you had just a little bit of common sense, you cannot have a relationship, certainly not a loving and a trusting relationship, without free will. And that's the component you have to that has to be present. You can't coerce somebody to love you, and you can't. And it always has to be a volitional choice.
Absolutely.
So, in order to be loved, you almost offer his family the opportunity to reject him, and therein lies the answer to a lot of the questions about who won't. It's because they have an opportunity to reject him, and many of them do. In fact, that's what Yahweh did, and what with Adam and Chawa, and they chose to get off Yahweh's prescribed path and walk away from their Creator. From that time forward, Yahweh has been teaching his family and others that chose to listen that the path that we are to follow and to return to him was the Moed Mikra, the called out assembly invitations to meet with Yah. And that is the path. All the men and women who work with and endure with and associate with Yahweh follow this most singular path and are recognized by Yahweh as Tzedek. If you recall, Molly Dode said he had more sins than he has hair on his head.
Correct.
And yet he was declared Tzedek. Abraham was declared Tzedek. Abraham and Yitzhak and Sarah were all. So I thought that we'd take a moment and examine what Yahweh means by Tzedek. And I looked mm-hmm. through all the lexicon definitions. And it says on the surface you find right away it means to be correct, to make or set, to be set right, to be set upright. Upright is, as you know, is a wonderful metaphor, upright pole. Yahweh was mm-hmm. Nailed to the upright pole. The upright pole that stands in the middle of the tent holds up the main support beam, or the main support for the pole that holds up the tent and expands that you can expand to include the family.
Mm-hmm.
You also, what a lot of people forget, that in the old days, the upright pole was also not only a support to protect the family against the weather and against the conditions and the shade from the sun of the Bedouin travelers. It also could be taken down and used as a spear. So it also is for their protection, to protect them against mm-hmm. wild animals or enemies. So it also can be conforming to that term. So that can also be to conform to facts. A standard. Standard, again, is an upright pole, which is like a Tishon or a Zion, the upright, the mark along the way, and the standard of truth. And to follow, this is the one I like the best that I found, is to follow the established path and course of action. So,
a lot of meaning behind that one word.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
So the thing that was so exciting now, I was going to go into the five conditions, but you cover those pretty well, and I agree with you. I'll repeat them real just briefly, just to so we're on the same page. And obviously, Yahweh said we're going to walk away from confusion, from Babel, from religion, and that's what you had to do, and what Terry and I had to do is
mm-hmm.
totally disassociate ourselves from society's schemes, the politics, the military, just about everything. I still
it's really hard to do in our society because I feel like even though I've spiritually walked away, I'm still living here.
Well, you have to. I mean, they're going to collect taxes on you or they put you in jail. So,
right. My kids go to public
school.
Right, and they sing Christmas carols at the public school. So it's really hard to completely be disengaged.
Yeah, you can't in that sense, but we certainly don't embrace it. We don't have to. I get tickled, all these football players. I wouldn't stand up and salute the flag to begin with.
Right. They're only catching on.
No other reason. You can go to the tablet of stone, and he always says, you know, I wrote this with my hand. I will not forgive you if you do these things continuously.
Right.
Duh.
Right there.
But
setting up our homes as kind of a, you know, an arc of a place that doesn't permit the Babylonian concepts in there, I think is really important too. Like making our home a fortress and keeping Yah inside and inviting the set apart spirit to be here.
Second thing you said, of course, for the covenant family is to trust and rely on Yahweh's promises and teaching. Now the key word there is His word, and where do you find His word? Well, that's in the Torah. You know, find almost nothing in the witness writings. I know there's a little bit in Matthew, in the Greek translations, a little bit in Revelations and all. But for the most part, everything, Yahweh said that the Torah was complete and everything that you needed to know.
For the open-minded, yeah.
For anybody who was open-minded and read it. But if you want to know where would we even find these five conditions if we didn't go to the Torah?
Correct.
So he says... So if we're going to trust and rely on His promises and teaching, we have to know what they are. So we have to carefully consider the terms and the conditions. And the mitzvah is found in that very thing, the Torah, which is the third condition. And then the fourth one, as you stated earlier, is to walk to God along the path He has provided to become perfect. Once again, we have the word tzedek. And, of course, parents are to circumcise their sons as a remembrance for this agreement. And so... That being said, I wanted to explore a little bit on tzedek, the opposite of the word of tzedek, which is rashah. It's oftentimes translated wicked, and it's spelled with a R, an SH, and an A, which is a rosh, a shin, and an ain. And in the, as you know, Molly, in the original pictograph, language is depicted as, this would be depicted as the words, and as a person's perspective or view. So when you have a ra, that's a man looking. It's looking in towards the left because the Hebrew obviously reads from right to left. The man or any person, a woman, man or woman, looking to the left or looking, observing something, and they're looking at the words, which is nourishing words or not so nourishing words. They can be evil words. They can be poisonous words. And the ain is would indicate that we're talking about something that is one's perspective or one's view. So we have the negative side is rashah. It's defined as to depart, to go astray from the correct path, and to become lost, to act, to rebel against Yahweh's teaching, and become convicted. Now, for me, it was helpful to understand when I recognized that the Hebrew language was a concrete language and that it was unlike the philosophical languages that we are usually deal with, the Latin languages, the Greek and the English tongues and all the Spanish, French, and so forth. Those are all philosophical. And so what I did is I broke down the words ra and tov will be used as an example, and I hope this might be helpful to somebody. If you look in the ordinary, or not ordinary, but you look for the vast majority of the lexicons and you look up ra, which we find is usually considered, you usually find this, it says it's adversarial.
Right.
Hasatan, by the way, means the adversary, and it means to be displeasing and evil. If you look up tov, is considered to be, you'll find pleasant, agreeable, good, beneficial, and pleasing. There's nothing wrong with either one of those. That conveys the idea. But the difference is, it's hard to quantify some of those type of words because they're more of an emotional thing. When I say so-and-so is good, a food is good, this particular food is good, it may not really be good. It just may be good to me or something of that probably a bad definition, a bad example, but you
so the subjective to perceptive. Yeah.
Right. But when you go to a ancient Hebrew thought and understanding, in the original Hebrew as a concrete language, then you get raw. Number one, you get the symbols. So you have a head of a person who's looking, observing, and you're looking, using an ain as the second letter, and it becomes their view. That's man's view.
Mm-hmm.
It would be man's view as opposed to God's view. If you look it up, it would be considered, Ra would be dysfunctional. I like it much better as a concept initially of dysfunctional, because that means to be impaired or abnormal action, not to function as intended. If we reduce it to something very concrete, then it's, for me, in fact, I teach art.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a teacher like you, and what I do is very similar to this. I take the most simple fundamentals of art. There's seven of them, which is very curious. There are seven of these things that that we use and we have to know in order to make an object in two-dimensionality appear to be 3D. That's the biggest kick in art, is to make it look like somebody, to have depth, you know, to have three-dimensional depth. And you can turn these little shapes and things by learning these fundamentals and turn it into something that looks like your grandmother, and everybody goes, wow.
You know? Right.
And it is. It's still a wowie for me. So the language really appeals to me in that sense, because these are very concrete ideas. Tob, on the other hand, tall, upright pole, a wa, increasing, something that increases, and a bet is the way you would spell it. The bed being, of course, the family home, the tent.
Mm-hmm.
This would be described as to do beneficial acts, to be functional, fulfilling the action for which it was intended. So to be good, or to be tob, you have to be functional and fulfill that which you're intended, which would be Yah's idea was to be part of his family.
Right.
This is to have a relationship with him. It's very hard to misunderstand those type of words when you put them in those type of contexts. Now, I know that things are deeper, and that this is maybe too superficial for some folks, but to me, I start there and then progress on. There's a reoccurring theme over and over and over again. We have Yah wants us to consider, to observe his offer and his teaching, and if we like it in him, to follow the provided pathway home. Most people don't seem to know that the Roman historians, you could go to Marcus Aurelius, who was a very famous historian, Roman historian, and he called the followers of Yahusha followers of the way. The theme that keeps reoccurring is Yah has a pathway for us home. There's a pathway, and a pathway to get on the path would be to be told to walk off of the path would be Ra.
Ra. Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably a marvelous way to reconcile a relationship when you consider that this is really the crux of the matter. This is really that for me is Yah walks the walk. He talks the talks, and he performs everything that is required. Here's what we're asked to do. We leave our path and walk away to him, and I realize there's some difficulty there initially. And we, of course, we have to join him seven times a year.
Right.
In a feast, a chag, a party, a gathering, to learn what he's promised and will perform on our behalf, and to celebrate those events both past and future. That's the deal. You don't have to be too smart to figure out, wow.
Right.
What I wanted to do is to examine if time permits, we'll go into Yada Yah and read some of a little bit of the commentary, but mostly the parts where it presents Yom Kippurim. But right before we did it, I sent you a little sheet on what I had broken down on Yom Kippurim. So what I do before I begin to look at the translations is to break those down as much as I can. And so I wanted to share that with everybody on what I sent you. Yom Kippurim, the first word, Yom, can simply be day. It's a singular. It can be the time of light between one dusk and the next one. If you look at the letters of it in the ancient Hebrew lettering, you have, this is kind of interesting, you have a hand leaning down, you have a yod, a waw, and a mem. So a day, he chose to write, Yahweh chose to show that as a, symbolically as his hand reaching down to increase something. And with the third word, the mem, being usually symbolized, well, it's a water. It symbolizes mm-hmm. water to be cleansed, and it also symbolizes the Ruach Kodesh.
Right.
The Yom is a, can be, in the lexicons, if you go through them, you'll find that it can be a particular day. It can be just a day. It can be day of days. It can be forever, forevermore, long as I live, yearly and perpetually. It can be a time to denote duration of various other acts or states. It can be a particular day defined by a proper name, like the days of Yahweh's return. In Hosea, another prophet, you'll find that it denotes a time of judgment with the implication of the implied restoration. In Mizmor Psalms 137:7, the day is the day of Jerusalem's calamity, sometimes known as Jacob's trouble. When you suffix the word Yom with thy, his, or their day, then you'll have a in a sense of, it can be the sense of a day of disaster or death. Mm-hmm. And that's important because this is the last call, isn't it, Molly? I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, so if you don't respond on this one, there's not another one to respond to. Now, that didn't happen this week, and it won't happen for a while because we have to go through many things that are prophesied. But it's shortly, it's not that far away, but on 2033, when after we've gone through this tribulation period, this troubles of Jacob, this is the last call. If you don't respond then, you'll be annihilated. This is a very, very serious day, although it is a happy day because we can join even at the last hour. It is a the day of Yahweh, the time of him coming in judgment, is another meaning for it involving blessedness and righteousness or brightness, tzedek, retribution, and it can be a time of a harvest. And, of course, we have a couple of harvest times. We had Teruah, we had Bikurim, and then the third harvest, of course, is Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
And you get all of that when you study a little bit on these lexicons and things. You'll find all of those in just the word Yom or day. I didn't get that in Sunday school. I don't know about you.
Not at all.
Or even Vacation Bible School.
No.
It's quite a revelation when you Hebrew, to learn a little bit about Hebrew. Then the second word, of course, that makes up Yom Kippurim is Kippurim. And Kippur is atonement. It's reconciliation. It's a pardon. It comes from the word kafar, which I think you used in your presentation, to
mm-hmm.
expiation, appeasement, to appease, to wipe clean, to pardon, to cover over, and to cleanse and wash. That's the work of the Ruach Kodesh, when it symbolically is the water, universal solvent. It can be by the oil. It can be atonement by the oil, which is symbolic of light, once again, the Ruach Kodesh, or
right.
Yah himself. As oil, it was also used to purify a leper, a symbol of the plague of death. Which is curious because Paul is called what? The plague of death. In religion, it's called the plague of death. Christianity is called the plague of death, primarily because it's Paul and Shaul.
Right.
It's also from the word, it's also associated with the word kofar. Kofar. My pronunciations are terrible, so yes, bear with me. Which means ransom or the price of a life. We are being ransomed as well. Someone else, Yahweh did all the work. He paid the price. He paid the ransom for our souls to be able to come to him. It also, this is interesting, the last one I had down here was to cover with pitch, as in the Ark of Noah's Ark, Nuach, which you used in your program too. I thought that was an excellent choice. That was very, very, very good. To the letters, they're fun again. You have from Kippur, that's the hand, the welcoming hand, if you would, the work of a hand. It can be Yahweh's hand. It can the nourishing words, the pay in there, the P Kippur, K P R. is the nourishing words of Yahweh, and they are directed at the man or woman who, or the child for that matter, who observes. It's a protective covering, and it goes over something, someone, or covering of a debt or wrongdoing. So now, armed with all that, we know what Yom Kippur means. So,
sure.
And then I'm going to move to someone who is really good at this. If you have a chance today, what we do, and I thought this has been great fun over these different years of Moed Mikros, as we'll take some passages out of the different sections that are in Yad Yah. And because we are called, Kara means to be called out to read and recite, and there's such good translations in here, and very easily verifiable for anybody who wants to work through that. So we use those in our when we gather together, and then we talk about them as well as we party. I realize this one is a little more somber than the others, but it is still a get-together of people, a meeting with y'all, and before the set apart spirit. So if we go to Yad Yah, the purpose, we'll go to what some commentary by Craig, I thought it was very pertinent. On this one, the purpose of the sixth invitation to meet with God is defined by this name, by its name, which we just covered. Yahweh wants to reconcile his covenant relation with Yisrael and Yehudim, just as we should want to be resolved, or to resolve our association with Yah. In conjunction with the Passover and unleavened bread, our response to God's invitation on Yom Kippurim will determine our eternal fate of our soul. Yahweh says that the souls of those who ignore or reject his summons on this day will be annihilated. They will cease to exist. In the Jewish community, they're afflicting their soul. They're taught to punish themselves, to suffer.
Right.
And that's sad. That is terribly sad. There is no fast on this day. There is no deprivation. There is nothing more uplifting than coming to God's presence, knowing that every troubling, nagging issue has been resolved by Him. Imagine seeing God's face, Craig went on to say, imagine seeing God's face for the first time, looking into His eyes, seeing Him smile. Imagine the feeling with which will come over you as you walk up to your Heavenly Father, adorned and radiant in light, in your spiritual mother's garment of light, anticipating God embracing you in His home. Imagine the thrill of having Yahweh personally write a perfect copy of the Torah on your heart. That's amazing to even imagine, but I can get a glimpse at it. Think of your songs you will sing and the sights you will see and the people you will meet and things you will now understand. That is what will happen on this day, on Yom Kippurim. The Day of Reconciliations is the official celebration of our adoption. It is our coming out party, our welcome to eternity. And now that this we are properly prepared, the next and final step is to journey out to camp out with God, which you expressed in your presentation as the next big party.
When I first considered Yom Kippurim, I had thought that was going to be something that I was going to do while I was on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't realize is that we are observing this, but we are going to be coming back to be witnesses. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, absolutely. And, we'll have time. The thing about Teruah is that we will be taken away as He has promised. We will not have to suffer through these things, the things that are about to take place. They're horrible. They're horrific and unbelievable and destructive. He will save us from that. And we can count on that promise. So what are we going to do? Well, obviously we're going to meet Yahweh. We're going to have that same meeting, but just not in this planet. We will already be converted to light. Being, which can be converted back to matter. That's, you have to go with Roy and Craig on that as far as all the technical stuff, but E equals MC squared and all that stuff. It is there. You can understand it. Not at the depth, perhaps, of Roy, but you can certainly understand how that can happen. But we'll be able to travel and see, and I assume that he'll be having fun. the one time that he comes back, engages, I should say, in the battle of
Armageddon.
Armageddon, but in the battle of when the invasion comes by the Muslims, he does stop that, because if he didn't, they would be absolutely run over. And he has a promise to those people that are left that have returned to Israel. He has promised that he would take care of them, so he's protecting them there. But he disengages. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be some malak here and so forth. There's a lot of things that happen in all the prophecies. But he's going back to celebrate with his family, and that would be us, plus all the other guys that are there and women that are there, Sarah and Adam and New Orleans family.
Right.
So, yeah.
But to be included as part of that is exhilarating, to think that we will be, you know, there and be able to see it happen, the actual reconciliation of, you know, the
the
relationship being repaired, everyone coming home.
We would all want to be back, and I can't imagine he wouldn't want us to be there.
Right.
It's going to be a tough little 5 days, but I'd like to see him clean up everything. It'd be nice to see the world without all the horrible stuff that we've done to it.
Right. And then Sukkah after.
Yeah, and then Sukkah after. Then the party begins. And I don't know whether we'll be here for the whole 1,000 years or we get to run off and play sometime. I don't know.
Well,
talking about time being what it is. But you could sneak off for a very long time. It may only be a second.
Well, yeah, if we're going to be light, won't time be really, I think it'll be different than how we're reckoning it now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But when you change yourself to matter and you're here on earth with those people and the families that will grow from those over the 1,000 years, then
your time
will probably experience time just as we are doing now.
Right.
But we would be free to go party. So,
That's exciting. I mean, that's the superhero stuff that I try to tell my kids about. That's the amazing
stuff. Comic book stuff you thought was a joke, but no.
Right.
faster than a speeding bullet, yeah.
Right.
We probably won't be able to get through this. I'm monitoring the time a little bit. But,
sorry.
On Kara, I'm going to read a little bit through Kara, which is called out, to read and recite this. For whatever reason, they chose to call it Leviticus 23. You can read this today, anyone who's interested, or at any time for that matter. But we'll say what Yahweh actually said. Then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, saying that on the 10th of the 7th month is the day of reconciliation. So we know exactly when we are to be called and when we are supposed to come for this mikra. This exists, he says, as a set-apart and cleansing invitation to be called out to meet for you. He didn't design these things for him, even though he loves these things. He designed them for us. They are for our benefit. We're the one that benefits from these terrific meetings. The next thing he says he declares, is that, and your soul shall respond and answer. Your soul shall respond and answer, appearing before and approaching the adoptive mother who purifies and enlightens and elevates unto Yahweh. Do not perform. I thought this was a very pertinent thing that I used to stumble over a little bit till I thought about it a little bit more. It says, do not perform any of the services of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day. Indeed, this is the day of reconciliations for you to be pardoned and forgiven in the presence of Yahweh, your God. Molly, what the heck could we do?
On this day?
I asked that question, I said, of course, should I do something? Should I know? You know, like we used to think in Christian terms, we'd always think about, no, you don't really do anything. He's doing it all. You're accepting it and appreciating it and sharing it, if you like. But it's almost silly to think, what could we do?
Right. We're such, pond scum compared to what,
yeah. What have I got to offer? How am I
going
to help?
Nothing.
You know?
And so, how much hubris do we have that we think we can influence anything?
Where's our brain?
Right.
And he goes on to say, because any soul who by way of relationship does not respond to the summon and the answer, on this life-sustaining and corporal and empowering day, they should be cut off and separated from the family. That's scary. You do not want to miss that. Yeah. This is there is a consequence to everything. Malachi says pretty much the same thing. He reminds us, so it's not just because we read it here. It's in Malachi. It's actually, you'll even find it in Matanyahu in the witness writings. Matanyahu, he'll say the same thing. But I thought Malachi was very good. Malachi as it's pronounced, mm-hmm. So it shouldn't be. It should be Malachi. I can say Malachi, so it certainly can be transliterated. Kippurim is fulfillment of a prophet Malachi who tells us that upon the occasion of Yahweh's return, Yom Kippurim, those who don't revere Yahweh's name, his Shabbat, and his word, will be uprooted and severed from the land of and the vine. It is yet another affirmation that God will return on this day, but it's also, to my view, another affirmation on the things that are most key to God, recognizing his name, not hiding his name. Of course, that's in the on the two tablets of stone with the mm-hmm. 10 statements. His Sabbath, he said that is set apart. That is also on that. And his word is also in there because he says to he would save the people who take advantage of his mitzvah. So once again, it's confirmed everywhere we go. That's what I like about Yahweh. He's probably the best teacher. He is the best teacher in the whole wide world. And he knows, he repeats it and repeats it from all different angles so you can't miss it. I try to do that a little bit when I teach. I'm probably pretty sure that you probably do the same thing because you can reach different people through different avenues. But he uses that as a tour de force. And he goes on to say that any soul who by association performs any of the business, this is a warning, any of the business of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining, empowering day, that soul I will annihilate from the midst of the family. Do not perform, he says this again. In the next verse he says, do not perform any part of the business of a heavenly father. This is an eternal, everlasting, clearly communicated prescription throughout all times, all generations, and all of your assemblies and your dwelling places. So this is neither an escape clause nor an exception. The summons to appear before the Spirit on this day is for all people, in all places, and in all times. It was not a Jewish thing in the Old Testament.
Right.
It wasn't something that didn't continue on and on and on. Religious institutions are the ones, and church groups are the ones who don't promote the observation of Yom Kippurim, and they lead their flocks astray to annihilation. And that would be most all of them that I know, if not all of them. If it has, it is for your time to rest and reflect. It's a Shabbaton, an observation, a celebration of a promise of the seventh day set apart for reconciliation and relationship. And so your soul, Yahweh says, shall respond to the summons and answer the call. This is kind of interesting based on Yahweh's testimony. There's nothing to do on Yom Kippurim apart from responding to Yahweh's summons and coming to his presence. We're simply asked to set this day apart as a time to revere Yah. Remember that he paid the price to redeem us. There's no fast, there is no affliction of oneself, and there are certainly no other requirements other than to be called out and meet. Then finally he says in this section, on this day, he says, and speaking of the rest, here is the rest of the 32nd verse. In the ninth of the month, associated with the time of renewal in the evening, from sundown until the sunset, you shall consistently observe, examine, consider, and actually focus upon your Shabbat. That day, that special day, the Shabbaton, called Yom Kippurim. That's a great little section in Yahshua. Each one of those are incredible in the sense of plain to understand, easy to words to look up if you're not sure, if you need mm-hmm. reinforcement, that sort of thing.
He uses small words.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank heaven.
I don't know about you, but I kind of concluded that the tragedy of all this, the horrific events that most assuredly will take place, I guess, between now and 2033, is that Yahweh declared that he will only save thousands.
Yeah.
He wrote that with his own hand in the first tablet of the stones, the stone that he began, and he begins the warning out of, he begins by warning us that if we associate with religion, if we build idols, participate in politics, bowing to false gods and other men and women, and serving them, he will not forgive us. He tells us he hates those who change his words, and any of those that change or diminish his name. He lets us know that his views of the parents who twist and distort his message as perverse, because they detest, abhor, loathe, and shun him, and by implication they keep the children from him. Then he says, and I'd like to quote this. Paraphrasing a little bit, but reading directly from the first tablet of stone, where he says, "But I would generally," this is the good part, this is the part you read the book to get to the end, the good part, "but I would genuinely act and actually engage to literally prepare and perform and produce, delivering to those who respond unmerited and unfailing mercy, unearned favor, and undeserved kindness on behalf of thousands." The tragedy is that it is thousands out of millions. That's one in a million. It's actually, of all the billions of people, only makes it one in a million. Actually, it makes less. There's probably been more billions than we have a way to count.
Right. But we still can still be grafted in. I'm still hopeful. You know, it's possible.
Oh, it's possible. They have to turn. And I've thought about that probably as much as most of us thought about that, because we feel so fortunate that we were able to see it and do it and understand
right.
What it is.
The way isn't easy.
No.
But it's accessible.
Yeah. Well, Molly, you know, when he says how much he dislikes people who don't know his name or twist his name, when you talk to people, though, you talk to people, and if you tell them that his name is not Jehovah, they'll freak out.
Oh, yeah.
You tell them there's no J, there's no V in Hebrew, number one. As you transliterate names, you don't translate them. You certainly don't make them up. His son's name wasn't Jesus. I mean, give me a break.
They don't change it because they want to sell Bibles, and Yahweh sounds too Jewish. That's a conspiracy.
I know.
It's money.
They just hate him. We just change it somewhere. We'll have the God we like, or we will have no God at all.
Right, and we'll call him what we like. Jesus sounds good.
Jesus, I thought it was Joshua. You know, that was about as close as I could come in my Christian days. But when you think about Jesus, and I thought maybe Jesus was some kind of Greek name or something, which is not.
Yeah.
But he comes in his father's name. So once you get his father's name, and it's Yahweh, then how do you get to his son's name as named after him, which is Jesus? I mean, this is so ludicrous, it's just almost, it's laughable.
But the response I get is, well, he knows who I am. He knows my heart. It doesn't matter what I call him.
He says, I won't know him.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a debate at that point. You just have to say,
right.
Somebody has to sit down and read this for themselves.
Correct.
Well, the question I would ask is, do you guys have a lot of relationship with people that you don't know their name?
Right.
I mean,
very little.
Yeah.
Or how about I change your name to something I like?
Yeah. You know, I just really like the name. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't call you Scott. I wouldn't call you by some other name all the time. After a while, you might throw a rock at me.
Well, if you call me by another name, I'd probably sit here and...
You couldn't respond.
You'd think I was ignoring you. I was ignoring you because you'd be saying something and I'd just be doing whatever it is I would be doing. And then all of a sudden you'd be like, hey, I'm talking to you. And I was like, what? Well, I've been saying your name. No, you weren't.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I've been saying Steve this whole time. That's not my name. What are you talking about? You know, nobody's going to respond to that.
Oh, but he's God. He understands. He knows. Really.
Oh, yeah. He knows what I'm trying to say.
Right.
No. Hey, what was, I can't remember what this Hosea, I believe it's Hosea, but the irony of all that is that's exactly what Yahweh says, God. And Molly, he says, all of those who call me Lord, my title.
Not enter.
Jesus'
right.
title. All who call me Lord, I'll get away from me. And then they say, but Lord. I say, get away from me. I never knew you. I don't know you. And that's right out of, and it's also repeated in, I think, somewhere in Matthew, too, or something.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, or Revelation. No, it's Revelation. That's where it is. So at what point your spirit is not disturbed by that? In any case, to finish off that last part, he says, undeserved, when we're talking about undeserved, unearned favor, undeserved kindness, and on behalf of thousands who move towards me, who love me, and also who approach me by closely observing, that's La Shemar, and that does not mean obey. I don't care what your strong says. There is nowhere you're going to find the word obey, and it's all relational. There's nothing about obey and the Torah. And he says, closely observing and carefully considering my terms and instructions, which are the conditions of my covenant, directions, codicils, which serve as prescriptions for a relationship agreement. The overall view, y'all, that I get is the theme that runs over and over and over. We got off the path, and he wants you back on the path. He provided a path, just like we have a path. If you are a shepherd, you have a path, and you go from this marker to this marker to this marker to, well, that's where I'm going to water the sheep in 2 days' walk. This is where I'm going to pastures I'm going to go to this time of year, such and such and such until I get home. And that's an excellent metaphor for us to use in the sense or understand that this is a pathway home. He tells you where the path is. He tells you what where to stop, where to refresh yourself, what to do. He gives you a map with all the instructions attached to it.
And if you deviate, it's death.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Well, if you're not on the path, he won't protect you.
Yeah, right.
He doesn't hurt anybody. I mean, he will hurt you at some point. He'll stand between you and them, to do that. But he doesn't go out of his way to destroy people. He just doesn't protect them.
Right.
The people around Noah, he didn't kill them. This was happening. He just didn't choose to. They didn't care anything about him, so they didn't talk to him. They didn't know him. And so, therefore, I'm not going to protect you. Why should I? I don't have any relationship with you at all.
You have the gift of life, and then that's done.
Well, you had free will.
Right.
You had the gift of life, and you had an availability if you really wanted to.
Right.
Now, over time, you don't, because your parents take you away, and that's why he hates the parents who twist this stuff and don't teach their children what he said, because they take them away, and they get further away, and generations pass, and it just becomes what we have now.
Right.
Well, in any case, I've been a little long-winded, so but I've enjoyed this immensely. Do you have anything you want to say as we kind of wrap it up? Is Scott still here?
I am. A coworker's talking with me. Otherwise, I'd say a little bit more to you guys.
Okay. Well, I hope people will get a chance to look at your program, Molly. I think that's wonderful stuff. I liked all of them. The Yom Kippur one was good. I'm looking forward to see what you do on Sukkah.
Okay.
Are you going to have that one ready for next week?
Say again?
Are you going to have the one for Sukkah ready next week, or is it already ready?
I'm hoping to finish it tomorrow.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah.
I hope you'll send us a copy.
I will.
And Craig, as I said, we should be back tonight, and we will probably talk about Yom Kippur as well, but... and he'll probably do a much better job than I did, but I was really impressed with you.
Not at all. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, dear. Take care. Happy Yom Kippur to all of you.
Shalom.
Shalom.